Support for today's broadcast comes from Natural Gourmet. Natural Gourmet is a natural food store specializing in vitamin supplements, homeopathic remedies, and organic foods. Located at the Shops of Knollwood, their restaurant features Thai-influenced foods for eat-in or carry-out.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Craig Cohen. The Champaign County Board is going through some changes. The board, which oversees the county budget, county buildings and roads, and a nursing home, and also appoints panels overseeing everything from rural cemeteries to property tax appeals, is in flux due to redistricting. All board seats are up for election this fall, and Illinois Public Media's Jim Meadows reports there are other changes: a reduction in the number of members, a change in the number of county board districts, and a change in who's running.
Someone who's not running is Republican Steve Moser. At age 69, Moser is retiring. He's turning the operation of his family farm in St. Joseph Township over to his son, and he's giving up his county board seat after 20 years in office. Moser is one of several Champaign County Board incumbents who have chosen not to run, and he's not thrilled with how remaining members intend to move the board forward.
We've got some new people on there that have come in there with ideas that they're going to change the whole makeup of how we do business, and it doesn't work that way. The constraints of the state are pretty much going to dictate what a county board does and what it doesn't do.
In all, 11 county board members are stepping down or have already resigned in anticipation of a board roster reduction from 27 to 22. They include top leaders like Democratic County Board Chair Pius Weibel and Alan Nudo, who had been the Republican caucus leader. The reduction is meant to make the county board more efficient and responsive. Champaign Democrat Patsy Petrie says there are pros and cons.
One argument is a smaller board will enhance the possibility of conversation. The argument on the other side says that a smaller board means we have less expertise, breadth of expertise on the board.
Petrie is running for re-election in the new County Board District 6, which, like most of the newly drawn districts, has no contested races. In fact, there are only 11 Republicans running for the new 22-member board, making a GOP majority mathematically impossible. But one Republican remains optimistic her party's entire slate could win.
I just am excited about the opportunity of the potential of 11 and 11.
That's former Champaign City Councilwoman Cher Hample, who's challenging incumbent Democrats Geraldo Rosales and Justice Committee Chair Michael Richards in the new District 8, which straddles Champaign and Urbana. Hample believes an evenly divided county board could force the two parties to work together.
We'll have to work it out. We'll have to have conversation, because you don't want it to be a draw every time. I mean, that would be the worst gridlock.
The departures of top leaders on the board might mean a re-elected Richards could end up as chairman or vice chairman. And he has ideas about how the county board's next leaders should approach the job.
We need to more efficiently utilize study sessions. We need to be thinking about our agendas and what we want to do with the county more in advance and not being as reactive.
The new Champaign County Board that voters elect next month will be seated in December. Steve Moser's departing advice to the new board: don't micromanage things that should be left to the county administrator. Don't put off decisions. And for the urban majority on the board, don't ignore the concerns of residents in rural areas like his. I'm Jim Meadows, Illinois Public Media.
Diet soda. We either love it or loathe it, but one thing's for sure, more people are drinking more of it. Preliminary new evidence suggests that, contrary to popular belief, diet drinks do not increase appetite in the short term and may help keep weight off down the road. But experts say water is still the best zero-calorie hydration for the body. NPR's Allison Aubrey has this report.
If you focused on changing just one thing, one strategy in your diet in order to move the needle on the scale, what would it be?
For me, it would be I would stop eating junk food at my desk at work.
Junk food, like what, chips, soda?
Chips.
That's Carletta Gurma, who was eating lunch out with her friend Julie Ost.
We were just talking about this. I was talking about the candy bowl at work. I know where two candy bowls are at work, So that would probably be the elimination.
Not a bad strategy. Those would be empty calories. But interestingly, neither mentioned all the liquid calories they consume each day. Carletta says she's addicted to caramel-sweetened coffees. And when it comes to soft drinks...
If I drink soda, I drink the real deal. Coke. I feel like if you're going to go for it, go for it.
So I asked Carletta, what if there were good reasons to believe that these sugary liquid calories were particularly significant when it comes to body weight? Would she be willing to listen?
Absolutely.
So here's the theory of a lot of experts, including Kara Ebeling of Harvard Medical School and Boston Children's Hospital.
I think that consumption of sugar-sweetened beverages may be a particularly high-impact behavior when it comes to controlling body weight.
To test this theory, Ebeling and her colleagues recently completed a big study designed to measure just this one thing, the influence of sugary drinks.
So we recruited adolescents who were drinking at least one sugar-sweetened beverage per day.
All of them were overweight, and for an entire year, these teens and their families received home deliveries of diet soda and water, and they were counseled to avoid sugary drinks. At the end of the year, Ebeling says, these teens who'd been on a trajectory of weight gain had gained significantly less weight compared to a control group of teens who had continued to drink sugary drinks.
We found that there was a difference of just over 4 pounds.
Just because of the differences in drinks, nothing else about their diet presumably changed.
That's correct. We did not counsel around anything else.
This is some of the strongest evidence yet that swapping sugary drinks for zero-calorie options can influence weight significantly. But there's still some resistance to the idea that diet soda is the healthy option. Friends Carletta and Julie say they're not ready to switch.
No. It's really hard to really understand what it does physiologically in the body.
For instance, earlier studies suggested that perhaps drinking diet soda somehow leads people to eat more. And Danish researcher Bjorn Rickelsen told me the Danes have had the same concern.
We had the idea for sure that diet soda will enhance the appetite.
But Rickelsen says this is not at all what he found when he studied it. He compared what happened when volunteers drank Diet Coke and when they drank water. He measured how this influenced hunger hormones.
We also measured what they were eating 4 hours after.
And he says what he found was very surprising. Sugary Coke led people to be slightly hungrier, while Diet Coke had a more neutral effect on appetite. It did not lead people to eat more at the next meal.
Our conclusion was quite clear. We found that if you're drinking soft drinks without calories, really it behaves exactly as drinking water.
We're still learning a lot about diet soda.
That's physician Robert Lustig of UC San Francisco. He's been pushing for Americans to make drastic cuts in sugar. And he says since drinks in the form of soda, juices, and sports drinks account for about a third of sugar we consume, they're the obvious place to start.
If you got rid of 33%, you would be knocking our added sugar consumption down from 450 calories a day to 300 calories per day.
And so he says if diet soda is the baby step to wean people from sugar, which he argues is habit-forming, maybe that's not a bad thing.
I kind of liken diet soda to methadone.
The drug used to get people off drugs. Not ideal, but perhaps effective. He still thinks drinking water is best, as do all the researchers I interviewed here. And friends Julie Ost and Carletta Gurma say, well, maybe.
I could save a lot of money if I just drank water only.
But part of the pleasure of drinking soda is the ritual, she says.
You like to pop the can or open the bottle. You like the sound of the bubbles.
So maybe it needs to be bubbly water. Allison Aubrey, NPR News.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: AgriGold Hybrids, Muhammad, Charles M. Hundley, Champagne, Michael Walker Consulting, Urbana, and Bates Commodities, Normal. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac from Monday, the 22nd of October, 2012. It's the birthday of John Gould, born in Brighton, Massachusetts, 1908. He and his wife settled in Lisbon Falls, Maine, on the farm where his great-grandfather had homesteaded. John Gould edited the newspaper there, where he got to meet a student from high school who was supposed to edit the school paper. but he got bored by it and wrote a satirical version. So Gould took the young man in hand and taught him how to shape up his writing. The student was Stephen King. 1942, John Gould wrote his first weekly column for the Christian Science Monitor. He continued that for more than 60 years. He wrote about baseball and night rides on sleighs, about fishing, about his mother's homeland of Prince Edward Island. One of his earliest books, Farmer Takes a Wife, was a big bestseller in 1945. It's the birthday of the novelist Doris Lessing, born in what is now Iran in 1919. Her father had lost a leg in the British Army. He was a clerk in a bank. When she was small, the family moved to Rhodesia. Her father became a farmer there, and they lived in a mud hut that was thatched, but it was full of books that her mother had ordered by post from England. She went to an all-girls convent school, married at the age of 19, had two children, divorced, married again, had another child, divorced, moved to London at the age of 30. And a year later, she published her first novel, The Grass is Singing, set in Rhodesia. Her best-known book, The Golden Notebook, came out in 1962. A few years ago, a critic wrote, "Nobel or not, some people still think of Doris Lessing as either a one-book wonder, famous for The Golden Notebook, or a literary version of a crazy bag lady writing books about her cats and novels set on other planets." Doris Lessing, who said, "A writer falls in love with an idea and gets carried away. If you can imagine the sheer pleasure of having an idea and taking it, it's one of the great pleasures in my life." Here's a poem for today by Denise Levertov, "Sojourns in the Parallel World." We live our lives of human passions, cruelties, dreams, concepts, crimes, and the exercise of virtue in and beside a world devoid of our preoccupations, free from apprehension, though affected certainly by our actions, a world parallel to our own, though overlapping. We call it nature, only reluctantly admitting ourselves to be nature, too. Whenever we lose track of our own obsessions, our self-concerns, because we drift for a minute, an hour even, of pure, almost pure, response to that insouciant life, cloud, bird, fox, the flow of light, the dancing pilgrimage of water, vast stillness of spellbound ephemerae on a lit windowpane, animal voices, mineral hum,